This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars Episode 82 was recorded on December 2nd, 2019. I'm Eric Townsend. Dr. Pippa Malmgren is back with us this week. Pippa, it's great to have you. I want to talk about the situation in Hong Kong. Now, as I think almost all of our listeners, I'm sure, must have heard, there was a really big standoff between protesters and police at Hong Kong Polytechnic University. Now, most observers are assuming, well, you know, sometimes it's students that get a little bit upset and get into scuffles with police. So they think the fact this happened at this specific university is just coincidence. You think there's a lot more to the story. Please elaborate.
Well, look, I think that we take so much for granted when we're trading from a trading floor or sitting at a desk at home, and you look at the markets and you assess the prices. And it's important now and again to think about, what am I taking for granted? What do I assume? And one of the things we assume is that there's always access to the internet. But what we saw in Hong Kong was that the obvious reason that the Chinese authorities were interested in that particular university and that particular part of the campus is because that's where 100% of the internet connection for all of Hong Kong is based. And if you control that, you get to see every single communication that goes in and out and identify who said what, gives you the power to cut it off and to isolate the island. And if you control the telecoms as well, you can literally black out a location. And so, you know, it's also interesting that in the Baltic Sea right now, one of the biggest areas of confrontation between NATO and Russia is over the internet cables that are underneath the ocean, on the ocean floor. These are things that are to do with real infrastructure that you just assume is there, it's reliable, you'll be able to make your trades tomorrow because you'll just get online. And I think that now is a moment in history where we should begin to ask a lot of questions about what do we take for granted. Another element of this is also rule of law. And, you know, having lived in Hong Kong myself, and I've gotten to know China and its leadership over the years and how they think, and it's a kind of very fundamental impasse, because the mainland Chinese view, the leadership view, is, of course, if you guys want this rule of law that you have in Hong Kong, that's fine. Go ahead. We don't really understand why it's so valuable to you, but if you really want it, that's fine, unless it's really important. And then you go, but that sort of defeats the purpose of rule of law if there can be a political intervention if it's really important. And then you say, well, okay, what are you going to intervene on? Like, tell me the issues where government is going to intervene. And they go, well, we'll decide when we see it. And then they go, well, then that triply defeats the purpose of rule of law. And the Chinese are like, what? Like, what's the problem here? Just use it unless we decide it's really important, and then we're going to override it. Now, that is a philosophical issue. It's a perspective that you're not going to change with the Chinese authorities. You can't explain it in a way that they would ever really comprehend why the value of that outweighs the approach they're taking. And this is kind of interesting that we're in the UK on the brink of this election. And, you know, the Jeremy Corbyn camp and Labour, they have a kind of similar set of questions that come up about what's the relationship of the state to private ownership of assets. And it's not that they're in the same camp as the Chinese, they're not, but it is that it forces the investor to ask questions about what can I take for granted and what can I not take for granted. And if I find myself in a world where I'm surprised, then where would I go with my capital? How would I deploy it? Including, by the way, would there be opportunities under a Corbyn government or even under Chinese control of the internet in Hong Kong? We may not like those outcomes. One may not like those outcomes politically, or one may like them, but they may still be investable in some way. And one has to think about, okay, how will capital move when these sorts of things unfold? You know, I have my own set of preferences about what kind of landscape I prefer from an investment point of view, but that's not really the question. The question is, how are these societies evolving? What kind of social contract is, you know, I always talk about the social contract. What kind of social contract are we edging our way into that is going to be the infrastructure, the philosophical infrastructure of the societies we're operating in? And again, you know, most traders, you start talking about philosophical infrastructure and they're like, what are you talking about? But I hope I'm making the point clear. These are very basic things. One feels that the internet is certainly there to trade on tomorrow, but maybe the philosophical infrastructure of that idea is not what you think it is. Another piece of that puzzle is the requirement. You know, the Chinese have said there's going to be a new requirement for facial recognition in order to be able to access a mobile device and or the internet. And so now you have to identify yourself and all your actions are associated with you. And, you know, again, it's not that I'm arguing in favor of, say, Tor and, you know, all of the illicit activity that occurs on the internet. But equally, I can see how isolating individuals and their particular activities online can create a world where government can start isolating people because they don't, it's not even that you have to express a political view, it's that you looked at the wrong news feed. And then what kind of world is that where we get penalized for looking at what is perceived to be the wrong news feed? Again, these are philosophical issues that have a very, very profound impact on how we put money to work. And that's why I want to raise it as a thing that people should think about in light of what's happening in the world today.
Now, you're talking about the assumptions that we make about the availability of infrastructure, like is the internet going to be there and working? A related topic that I know you've had a lot to say about in the past is the tendency human beings have to assume that large institutions are immutable. And I remember back in 2008, you were telling people like, hey, have you thought about the possibility of, well, what if your bank doesn't exist next week? And, you know, people just rolled their eyes and said, okay, this lady is crazy. She doesn't get it. She doesn't understand these big investment banks. They're 100-year-old institutions. They don't just go away. Well, then Lehman happened. So what should we be thinking about today, 11 years later, in terms of assumptions people are making about institutions that they know could never go away, that maybe they should be thinking differently about?
Yeah. And what's even more mind-bending is the idea that an institution can fail and the markets are okay. Like you can actually have failures and still carry on. What you get is a repricing of risk. And, you know, I remain fairly bullish myself about where markets are going. And you know, I've been very bullish for quite a few years now. When most investors are very much in the sky is about to fall camp. And so I haven't really changed my core view, I have to say. And as we come into 2020, I think the possibility of upside is still exceeding the probability of downside because, frankly, we've had so much downside. I mean, so many bad things have been announced, and yet the markets are still holding up. And so it's hard for me to see what's so much worse that would cause a really big meltdown than most of the news we've already had. But still, having said that, I think we should, again, think about possibilities that maybe seem strange or unimaginable. I'll give you another example rather than an institutional failure, because I think we may see failures of businesses. We're seeing lots of businesses fail, but that doesn't mean that the whole world falls apart. That means we had a misallocation of capital. We had bad investment decisions. That capital gets reallocated to somebody who's better at it, and it moves. And so it changes, and it doesn't mean that things are over. Similarly, how do we measure a successful economy? So everybody loves quoting the international shipping rates. And they say, well, you know, the amount of international shipping has fallen by whatever percent. And you go, yeah, but you know, we live in a world where you're going to 3D print buildings. You know, when you 3D print, you do it locally. You don't ship it from China. You send the plans over the internet and then you hit the go button on a 3D printer. And so you have just as much economic activity, but you don't measure it the same way. And this is the sort of thing I think we should start reflecting upon. Which markers do we like to turn to for our understanding of what's happening in the economy? And are they still really valid and relevant, or are they kind of outdated by technological innovation?
Pippa, you mentioned innovation. I know that's a subject you have a lot of passion for. Give us an update on your thoughts. What's happening in the world today with respect to technology innovation?
Well, you know, I'm smack in the middle of it. I'm in the business of building aerial drones and autonomous vehicles. And people say to me, first of all, wow, how did you get into that? Because that's such a big leap from being a policy advisor or a, you know, sort of chief currency strategist of an investment bank. And the answer is, well, you know, real betting of your money happens when you make a decision to actually build the economy, to not just put capital behind somebody else's idea, but to really try to innovate yourself. So, you know, hopefully I've made the right bet, but I'm smack in the middle of building. And in this process, I've really learned a lot about how innovation really occurs. And it's so different from what I had thought. You know, I really believe that you could tell if a company would do well or not based on how many coders they had from MIT and Stanford. Now I realize that actually going to the traditional conventional universities, not that they aren't wonderful, they are, but you know, it knocks a lot of imagination out of you. People kind of do things the same way, the expensive way. And people who come from a different background can quite often produce much more innovative stuff because they're like, why not? Why can't we do it this other way? And also little companies, tiny companies like mine, are able to create extraordinary technologies without the benefit of a lot of money or a big space or a big lab. And so having experienced this, I now have much more faith and confidence in the capacity of the innovators to keep delivering than I ever would have had I stayed in a purely financial investor role in the markets. And so this is a key thing too, because when investors start to see, for example, the Tesla story crack up, and it is cracking up, right? It's not a pretty picture, but that doesn't mean that all technology is up the creek or even that all electric car technology is up the creek. In fact, what it seems to mean is that Porsche and BMW's new electric car offerings are absolutely looking beautiful and fantastic for the market. And people are very willing and interested in buying into that space because they've watched what happened at Tesla and they're going, well, actually, there are alternatives that might work better. So the innovation proceeds, even though the Tesla headline for some people, it says, you know, the markets are going to crack because technology can't deliver. No, that company maybe isn't delivering what was expected. So this kind of willingness to shift institutions, not shift the subject matter, if you see what I mean. I certainly see it in the drone space because a lot of people are like, oh, well, lots of drone companies haven't done very well. Therefore, drones are a bad space. Well, no, a lot of drone companies did badly because they had bad management, bad prioritization. They totally underestimated the value of getting the hardware right. They outsourced that to China. They've spent way too much on getting software that was vastly beyond what the client actually needed to do the job. So just because all those decisions were poor doesn't mean the whole sector is not investable. So that's just a practical example.
Pippa, finally, before we let you go, you are expressing a few views, a little bit more concerned than we've heard from you in the past. Now, in the past, you've told us that you really thought the U.S. still looked pretty darn good economically. Is that still the case? And if not, where should we be thinking about capital allocation?
Yeah, I have to say, I think the U.S. really looks good. And to be clear, that's not a political view. That's just from an investor standpoint. And it's really the middle of the U.S. It's not the coastlines. It's the interior and again, particularly Texas. are really looking fantastic. They are attracting capital, they're generating jobs, lots of innovation occurring in these places. I think the ecosystem that Silicon Valley built is now migrating to other locations. And so the country isn't tied up with only one place to raise capital anymore. There are many, many places. And as we see the rest of the world stumbling, tripping around, not quite clear which way it's going to go, emerging markets have their troubles. The China relationship, you know, sending off alarm bells, you know, headlines like the one we've seen where China's refused entry for U.S. military ships into Hong Kong. These kinds of things make people really nervous about being invested around the world. And where are they going to go? I think they're going to go to the U.S. You know, even with what's happened in Hong Kong, I've been in conversation with lots of lawyers about, okay, what will the new legal center be after these events? And the answer is really not Singapore, because Singapore also has its issues when it comes to how contracts are handled. They're going to look at the UK or the US. And between them right now, everybody's going, well, actually, the US is really firing on all engines. And I can't tell you how many people I know who are starting to set up businesses, international businesses from abroad coming into the US. Of course, what's fascinating is they still all want to be in either New York or San Francisco. And I'm like, if it were me, if I were creating a business or building out an existing European or international business, I'd go into the middle of the US. I'd go to places like Nashville and Atlanta and Texas and Arizona, because these are the places where they're growing really, really fast. But the rest of the world doesn't know this part of the country. So I still think there's maybe lots of opportunity there.
Well, we just saw Charles Schwab relocating their corporate headquarters from San Francisco to Texas. So certainly it's a trend to watch. Pippa, I can't thank you enough for another terrific interview. We look forward to getting you back again soon. And let's try to get you hooked up with a full-length feature interview on the Thursday Night Podcast one of these days. Listeners, be sure to stay tuned. We've still got Mark Gordon coming up on the Thursday Evening Podcast for the Macro Voices Podcast Network. I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly research roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.